Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who's covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically, the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey, everybody. Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio, as always. I'm not in Houston with the Warriors. Stick around. I will catch the Warriors when they come back, whether they've won the series. This would be on Wednesday night, early tonight, or if they're continuing the series. I am here thinking 49ers, as always. When all other things are going on, 49ers are on my mind. Certainly on the mind of my friend, the great Nick Wagner from ESPN, beat writer, major NFL mind. I don't know why I just said that, but you are. Nick, how you doing today? Thanks for being on the show.
I'm good. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm preparing for a little dental surgery today. I had to get on here before I did that, because if you had me on later, who knows what kind of crazy stuff.
It could have been good. So. It could have been, depending on what kind of drugs they're giving you. It could have been really good, but we will hopefully you get through that nice and fine. I've been through plenty of dental stuff myself, so I'm just wincing for you. Let's get this done early. Let's get you through that whole dental thing. Let's talk some stuff. Maybe this will be a little bit more pleasurable than dental surgery, but we shall see.
We did it in this order on purpose.
Too, exactly, so. Exactly. Who knows how the day could bring. 49ers offseason is over. Essentially, it's closed. We'll see. They can do some little drips and drabs there. We know they have the two big other negotiations still going on, but the draft concluded, 11 picks. They just made a move yesterday to assign a offensive tackle, DJ Humphreys, former number one pick from 2015. Coincidentally, right when the draft compensatory pick window was over, does not count against the compensation pick formula, which I know 49er fans are obsessed about. I understand. This does not count in that. Just big picture, Nick, we saw the salary purge, which I call the salary purge. I think we all can see that they got rid of a lot of money. They got rid of a lot of players. Didn't bring much in free agency. 11 picks in the draft, obviously real fine focus on that. We know they just signed George Kittle to an extension. Just in your broader view, what's your feel for what happened this offseason with the 49ers?
Yeah, I think the number one thing for me is that this probably did need to happen. Now, you can argue about the extent of the moves that they made and what they did, but the way I look at it is like this. Once you decide to go down the road of, we're going to eat the crap, for lack of a better term, in terms of the dead money on the salary cap and things like that. Once you start going down that road of like, well, we've taken $20 million and now there's another $10 million, and it's like, just do it all at once. Like, rip the Band-Aid off and just do it all at once, so that you're not doing it down the line. And I know you've written and made the point ad nauseum about the cash spending, right? Like, cutting down on the cash spending. But there is a cap element to this too, and they're kind of intrinsically tied together. And I think when you start seeing some of the releases, like the Malik Collins and the Leonard Floyds and things like that, where it's like, yeah, you know, we could have they could have done this next year, or they could have kept those guys for another year. Well, then now you're looking at the void years that are going to come onto the cap the following year. And so there's different elements to that that I think came into play. And so from that point, I understand. Now, their argument would probably be they can still compete if they're healthy, right? Because they lost so many big name players last year. The argument, the pushback on that would be a lot of those guys that got injured have an injury history. A lot of those guys are coming off of significant things and they're not getting any younger. And so is this a bit of a reset year in terms of the cap and cash and all that? Absolutely it is. Is it going to be a reset year in terms of the product on the field? I think there's a chance for that. Now, that would be a lot easier to swallow if they did this last year. If they went 6-11 and they had done all this and you were saying we're going to turn around and compete next year when the Super Bowl is on your home field, I think that would have been a lot easier for people to swallow. But the fact is they tried to go for it one more time, and now it looks like it could be a two-year scenario. The other side of that all is, Tim, Vegas still has him as a favorite. So Vegas doesn't like giving away money, which I think is an interesting thing to think about just in terms of the way they're still viewed, at least by people outside of the Bay Area.
They still got good players like that. There's no question. They've still got expensive players, and I understand everything you're saying. I've been critical to a point. Other than, like, listen, the team is free to budget the way it budgets as long as you have a competitive roster. We'll see if this is a very competitive roster. But you better then pay the guys who deserve to get paid, right? If you're saying all this, it's because we've got all these big contracts coming up, Brock Purdy being number one, but George Kittle, Fred Warner are the next two. They got the Kittle deal done, and I'll give them credit for that. Like, you can't just start screwing around with the players who have to be back. Do you think this is a sign? And as I wrote today, I mean, I haven't heard anything specific since the Kittle deal, but you're not signing Kittle for $19 million a year without thinking that Brock Purdy is going to be throwing him passes for all of those years. What's your sense? Is this a signal that they feel good about Purdy? This is a signal that they have to get Purdy? Where are you on their sense of the Purdy situation and Purdy's feelings back towards the 49ers?
Well, I don't want to make too big a deal out of it, but I did think it was very notable that in his pre-draft presser, John Lynch said, we've had substantive talks, and I feel like it's going in a good direction. And it was notable not because he was being optimistic. He's always optimistic about these things, right? But it was notable because he does not like giving incremental updates during negotiations. And that was as big of an update as you know, saying we've had substantive talks. I don't know if he's ever really said that and then followed it with, this is headed in a good direction, a.k.a. he feels good that whatever those substantive talks were is leading them down the road of a deal being done soon. Now, how soon is soon? I don't know. I think OTAs has always kind of been like a reasonable time to think maybe they could get something done, which would be coming up at the end of the month. That would fall in line with a couple of the deals that they got done last year. Christian McCaffrey redoing his deal, extending Juwan Jennings. Those were right around OTAs or into the mandatory minicamp. So I have not heard from anyone who thinks that this has been acrimonious. I haven't heard from anyone who thinks that this isn't going to get done. I think it's just a matter of if they can find that sweet spot. And for me, I've been writing this since January based on what I've been told. I think that number comes in a little bit north of what Jared Goff and Tua got and a little bit south of what Josh Allen just got. So you're talking in that $51 to $54 million a year range. Obviously, the guarantees and all that matters way more than just the annual average value. But I think that's where this is headed. I think that's been where it's headed. The fact that Brock Purdy showed up for the offseason program, that didn't surprise me necessarily. I think he'd be more inclined to hold out if he was going to from things that are actual on-field activities, whereas just working out or whatever isn't necessarily as much of a risk. So that's my take on it. The Kittle thing, like, I just never felt like that was a difficult thing because it was very much like McCaffrey last year where you're giving him a raise to get him back to being the highest paid player at his position. But it's not like it's not like the Purdy thing where you're paying him 50 times what he was making, right? It is just an incremental raise essentially. And Fred Warner would be a similar scenario too, right? Where it's like his cap numbers the next couple of years are unpalatable for the Niners. So doing an extension is actually favorable for them from a cap standpoint. So those two, that never really felt like it was going to be something that was going to be super hard to get done. Obviously the Kittle thing wasn't. Warner may be a little bit different because there's 2 years left on his deal instead of one, but all of this to say, I think the Purdy deal is still going to get done, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's here in the next few weeks.
If there is a through line, it really is. If you maintain your level of play, if there's no drop off or if there isn't a significant injury, the 49ers are paying. Now, again, I've been critical. I will keep saying I've been critical of what they did, but I totally understood if there are going to be players that they had to pay and they do pay them, then I will say, yes, this is what this was about. Still have questions about what they did, but George Kittle, I mean, I asked him, like, are you, you know, last August, are you worried about you being a cap cut at some point? And he said, no, because if I put the numbers up, if I continue to be a player that they want to have, that I should be around, I think I will be. And I think that is still there as a little cutthroat in the middle of the roster.
Yeah.
But I do credit the 49ers for being there. Now, listen, if Brandon Ayuk's contract was coming up this year, might be a different situation. Yeah. Obviously, we saw what happened with Debo. It could always change. Leonard Floyd, in a borderline, Javon Hargrave, they got out of. I understand there's some cold decisions that have to be made. I am going to say at this point, though, I understand everything that's happened in the last 4 or 5 days. And I think Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch maybe feel a lot better about the last 4 or 5 days. Where do you think their minds were through this whole process? I'm not saying that they were against it. I think they understood it, but maybe they weren't feeling real great about the first wave and are feeling a lot better now.
Yeah, Kyle did not love this, as you could imagine. I know that he was not a fan of having to do this, but I also think he did feel like in his heart of hearts, this was something that probably had to happen. And I think the part of the purge being and the Exodus being as big as it was because they did try to give it one more go last year with what they had, where you might see other teams that would spread it out over a couple of years, where last year some of these guys might have been on the way out, or maybe they wouldn't have signed a couple of guys like the Leonard Floyds and the kind of those mid-level deals as much. But having to do it all at once was absolutely painful. And I think it was painful for John Lynch too. But I know it was for Kyle. And so I think that they view it as, yes, this needed to happen. It's not something that they enjoy, but I also think they feel like they can press the buttons to get this team back to being competitive if they can have better health luck. Now, that's a big if. As I mentioned earlier, you're gambling a lot. And now the way they've done it is not only are you gambling on the health, you're gambling on a lot of young players too. The guys who are already in-house take a step forward, but the rookies that are coming in to come in and play big roles. And so there's a lot of gambling going on here, at least as it pertains to 2025. But I think what their ultimate hope is that even if they're not a big-time contender in 2025, that it won't be long before they are again. And again, that's going to come down to how is this draft class shake out? How do some of the young players that are already on the roster improve, and do they improve? And I think, to me, Tim, that's the other part of this discussion that gets lost, is we're seeing a team that is transitioning from a core of guys that you knew who they were building around, right? And a lot of those guys have left this offseason. I shouldn't say a lot, but a few of them have left. They are trying to figure out who that next core is. D'Amador Lenore, yes, he's in there. Brock Purdy, once he signs this extension, he's in there. I think they thought Brandon Ayuk was there. That one I still don't really know what to make of, but I do think they hope that he can get back to that level. And then you still have open spots. So it is not just finding guys who can be starters. It's finding guys who can be the foundation of your team for the next 10 years. You know, Warner and Bosa will be kind of the bridge guys, but they need other guys who can step into that role and be the next guys to get paid.
All right, 11 draft picks, heavy emphasis on the defensive front seven. Do you have a guy or two that you're going to underline and go, okay, this? I mean, we all know Mykal Williams is essentially a starter already. They'd rarely do that, right? They rarely draft a guy and go, okay, you're a starter now, or at least have it in the last few years. Who else are you looking at as kind of a spotlight on? You're going to be looking at minicamp. You're going to be looking at the rookie camp. You're going to be looking throughout training camp who could be a really important part of this team right away.
The one that I think, and I'm not the only one to say this, I think Barrows has said it, maybe even on this podcast, that CJ West is a guy who's really interesting. And I think a lot of people were kind of in on him. He was, I think in a normal year where the defensive tackle class wasn't as deep as it was this year, some of his deficiencies might have been overlooked and he would have gone a lot earlier. He would have been maybe a late second round pick or something like that. But since 2021, when he became a full-time starter, he was the only player in the FBS to have at least 50 quarterback pressures and 50 plus run stops. So that tells you that he can generate pressure. The sack numbers weren't great, but when you're playing zero and one tech, that's kind of, that's pretty common. That does, you don't see a lot of sacks from that position, but I do think he could translate to a three tech. I think there is that possibility for him, at least on first and second down, to be that kind of guy. He's excellent against the run. So he's an interesting guy. The guy that fascinates me the most, and I admittedly hadn't watched hardly any of him in the lead up to the draft, but I did over the weekend after they took him, is Upton Stout, the slot cornerback. He's kind of like a supercharged version of Kaywan Williams, and I was just fascinated by the way Western Kentucky used him. I tweeted it the other day because I had to go – after I watched him, I looked it up. I wanted to see, like, where's the breakdown and where he's lining up in this defense. He was playing middle linebacker. He was playing safety. He was playing slot. He was playing outside. They were using him all over the place. And this is a 5'9", 181, 185-pound guy who bench pressed 225 21 times at the combine. I mean, you just don't see guys with his combination of kind of speed and strength at his size. So the question, of course, with him will be, can he hold up? But I think he's a fascinating kind of chess piece that I think Robert Saleh likes to have, and a guy that I think you know how much they loved Kaywan Williams when he was here. If he can reach that kind of level and even be a little bit better version of him, they could really be cooking there at cornerback.
You think Robert Saleh had a real big input on this? I imagine he did, but I mean, like, where do you see that influence coming from Saleh?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, and I think it's funny because, you know, there were a couple of moments during the draft and post-draft pressers or the nights after, they do the press conferences. And one of the questions was, does Upton Stout remind you of Kaywan Williams? And, like, without missing a beat, Kyle and John say, yes. And then they were asked about C.J. West. Does he remind you of yes. And it's like, well, what do those guys have in common? They were kind of foundational key guys that maybe weren't the big stars. But in Robert Saleh's first stint, like, those are guys that he was looking for. And so can he find those new types of guys? Even Nick Martin, they don't want to compare him to Dre Greenlaw because obviously those are huge shoes to fill. And that's very unfair to put on him to think he could come in and be Dre Greenlaw. But that's what they're hoping for. I mean, that has to be the thought process, like, best case scenario. That's what he is. So I think in those ways, it was kind of clear that this is Robert Saleh's got his fingerprints all over this thing. And I do think, too, the other way, Fred Warner talked about this when he talked to us the other day. He said Robert Saleh's defense has evolved. He's evolved in the way he's thinking. And I think one of the ways he's evolved is seeing the need and the want of getting bigger bodies on that defensive front. And if you go back to last year, there were teams they played that ran gap scheme, run attack, just run it right down their throat. The Rams did it to them a couple of times. And a lot of it was they were just missing those big bodies. And so I think Alfred Collins was a pick that was very telling on that front. And even C.J. West, who under normal circumstances probably wouldn't be considered a three-tech candidate, I think he probably is, where you could put him and Collins in there and you have two big kind of run-stuffing bodies in the middle of that defensive line. So I think those are just a few of the ways that Robert Saleh's influence has already showed up here.
It's interesting that Fred said that. Great point by you to note of the evolution of it. Kyle's kind of said it even from, like, the end of the last regime, the defensive coordinator. Like, you need to, like, okay, they're doing something. Let's change. Let's adjust. You know, it's not just what we do. We have to adjust while, he's doing it on offense. Now, people can complain about Kyle's adjustments sometimes are not, they don't look fantastic in the fourth quarter sometimes, but he is making adjustments. He's certainly a schematic guy. And I think he felt that they, maybe the last 2 years, they weren't as nimble on the fly. And it wasn't just scheme. You could learn the scheme. Can you learn the proper adjustment to the scheme? Can you? And the Jets weren't playing the exact same defense that Saleh was playing for the 2019 and 2020 with the 49ers. What do you think they might do some more of? Or where do you think those kind of adjustments are going to happen with this defense? You mentioned the bigger defensive line, certainly. Where else maybe their zone defense are going to get away and blitzing more? What kind of things could we see from this defense?
I think you could see more pressing with the corners outside. It was something they dabbled with a little bit last year. And, Tim, the other thing from last year, too, is I think Kyle Shanahan, one of the reasons he's thrilled to have Saleh back is because I think he was more involved defensively than he wanted to be. Not that he doesn't want to be involved with defense, but he's got a lot on his plate on game day when he's calling the plays. And so I think being able to have a coordinator he trusts who can make those in-game adjustments, not just the kind of overall view of evolving defensively, will help him. But I think you'll see some of that. I wouldn't be surprised if you see more bare fronts. You see, you know, five guys down on the defensive line. The way they drafted kind of tells you that they're, you know, Nick Martin, for example, one of the things he did really well 2 years ago at Oklahoma State was blitz. I think he had 6 sacks at Oklahoma State while playing off-ball linebacker. So I think maybe that's something you see a little bit more of. And especially when you add those big bodies on the defensive line, where the idea is that those guys and Alfred Collins is going to be eating up multiple blockers, theoretically, that should free up Nick Martin or Fred Warner to blitz a little bit more and do a little bit more in the pass rush game. So those are a couple of wrinkles. Obviously, without seeing it on the field or seeing what they're doing, it's hard to really know exactly what the way he's going. But I think there are some clues just in terms of kind of the profile of guys that they're bringing in.
I thought going back to Quan Williams, he was one of their best blitzers, right? I mean, he was very good at that. That's what you have not seen even past three years. I'll include some of the good years in there. Just clean shots at the quarterback. Like, we've seen the Chiefs get clean shots at the 49ers in Super Bowls. They don't scheme that. That hasn't happened. You know, they're counting so much on the ends to get the pressure. Well, if you don't have that great pressure from, you know, both of the ends, sometimes you got to scheme it up. I think Shanahan would love to see that.
And I think, you know, last year in camp, there was a lot of times where and you were there. I mean, you probably saw it too. Diamador Lenore was doing a fair amount of it, and he looked good doing it. And then you just didn't see it a whole lot. I think that they tried it a couple of times early and maybe it didn't work. And then they just kind of like, we're not going to go that way anymore. So I think they have guys, whether it's Lenore or it's Stout or whoever, but they have guys, even Marcus Siegel, the safety they drafted, who has some of that ability too.
All right. DJ Humphreys signed a tackle. I kind of remember him from the draft. I think Florida, starter for a lot of years in Arizona. I don't remember him being great. Maybe like, I think a Pro Bowl alternate 1 year. And got hurt in 2023. ACL signed with, who was it last year? Kansas City.
That's where the Chiefs
started 2 games. He had a hamstring injury. Zeke is like, he's a guy that could compete with McKivitz at the right tackle, or is he strictly, you think, just a swing tackle?
I think it's hard to know without seeing him come back from the injury at this point. I do think it's funny that the Niners and Chiefs kind of swapped swing tackles, one at a much more bargain rate than the other one. But I think that, yeah, the initial thought has to be he's your swing tackle and he can, you know, he's there if Trent Williams has a setback or any of that kind of stuff. But I think the Niners are pretty happy with the way McKivitz played last year. And I do think personally that McKivitz played pretty good. I don't think he was the biggest weakness on that line by any means. And I would argue that other than Pooney, from a health and consistency standpoint, he was probably their second best lineman last year. So, and he's going into another contract year. So I think there's a lot of reasons to think McKivitz could maybe even take another step forward. Now his ceiling is limited a little bit because he's not a great athlete, but I do think that there may be a little bit more juice to squeeze there. So yeah, I think my initial read is that that's where Humphreys fits in. If he comes in and looks good, and maybe even if he can play guard, I have no idea if he has any history doing that. I don't think he has in the NFL, but maybe he can push at that left guard spot. But if nothing else, I think the Niners clearly knew they needed to add another tackle to the mix in some way, shape, or form, and they found one without having to kind of dip into the compensatory formula. So we're a worthy flyer, if nothing else, although certainly not a long-term solution at either of those tackle spots.
Yeah, that's the question, obviously. Talked about it endlessly, and many people have, like, just get a tackle in there, just get a tackle in the program. Like, you know, we know how strict they are about what they want out of a tackle. We know very few qualify in every draft class. Well, you got to get the one or two every other year at least, and they have not done that. I understand they've gotten through it. They've been fine, but Trent Williams certainly is not young. He misses games, and McKivitz can be spotty at times. They have other way to center, I would point out, as a large weakness. Left guard, last year was not great. Well, where do you, like, is this the way it's going to be with them at tackle? Have you seen some chances for them to take a tackle that they've missed? And, like, can they keep riding it out without drafting a tackle in the first 3 rounds every year?
No, I think you make a good point. I've heard you say it a couple times with Barrows, just talking about getting a guy into the program, and Jalen Moore being a great example. Yeah. Like Jalen Moore, a guy that they wanted to play at guard, and they never really got a chance to do it because they had injuries at tackle, which just drive your point home a little bit further, yeah. Right? Like it's not the – and Colton McKivitz was a fifth-round pick. And, I mean, did they expect him – he was another guy they thought was going to be a guard, and he ended up being – he's a pretty middle of the road, at least NFL right tackle. And you could do a lot worse than Colton McGinnis. They can do better too, of course, but getting guys into the program is important. And I do think that I know they had a couple of their eyes on a couple of guys that went in that third round right before they ended up taking Upton Stout. I think that might've been a spot, Charles Grant from William and Mary. That was an interesting prospect. I will also say this. I think there was a chance, if the draft fell a certain way, that the 49ers would have taken a tackle in the first round. I think if Mykal Williams had gone to New Orleans, like a lot of people thought that maybe he would, and Kelvin Banks had slipped to 11, I think he was seriously in the discussion. The other guy I think was very seriously in the discussion that maybe people don't realize as much, and I don't know if they would take him at 11, but maybe in a trade-down scenario they really liked, was Josh Connerly, the tackle from Oregon. That is a guy that I believe, at least from what I've been told, they had a lot of interest in. I think he came on a 30 visit, but regardless, I had heard he was in the discussion as someone that they liked. So I think when John Lynch says that the need hasn't met the value, I think there is validity in that. I also think that sometimes when it comes to a certain position, especially a premium position, you got to go get your guy. Yeah. And, you know, I thought last year in particular, the Roger Rosengarten thing, and I think Renardo Green is going to be a good player for them, but Roger Rosengarten was kind of there for the taking. If they had made a small move, I think they could have pulled that off. And so, you know, I know a lot was made of Kingsley Suamataya, the guy that traded, and he obviously had a really rough rookie year. So that doesn't look as bad. But regardless, I think if there is a guy that you really like who plays a premium position, and in a year like this, where there was 11 draft picks that you had, and you made all 11, and I get why, because you need to replenish, but sacrificing another one of those picks or two to go get a tackle and at least give yourselves a chance to have a guy who could be a long-term replacement, because I think what's going to happen is, more than likely, next year when we're sitting here having this conversation at this time, we're going to be talking about how the Niners treated their draft on the offensive line like they did this year on the defensive line. And I think there's a very realistic world in which that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, for them, I think tackle, I've said this before, but I'm really thinking it is like quarterback. Like they're so picky that if there's three of them you like, that's it. You got to get one of them. It was, you know, 2 years ago would have been nice. Last year would have been nice. This year almost was.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals. But you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed, because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Like automatic, and they, you know, and I think they did have a desire to, but then they didn't move up for it and they lost them. So they can't take another tackle for 50 picks, right? I mean, this is gets, I understand the logic of it. I think it makes sense for defensive end, defensive tackle, wide receiver, maybe like da 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 da. It doesn't make sense for quarterback unless you luck into the last pick of the draft. And it probably doesn't make sense for tackle for them. Now, on and on, I'm sure they're sick of hearing it, but like Trent Williams gets hurt, which has happened, as we know. I don't know what they're going to do. Like, who's playing left tackle? I guess DJ Humphries is playing left tackle.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And I think the other point to make here is like, I know a lot of people were upset on day three of the draft when the Niners aren't taking offensive linemen. And to me, like, I'm not gonna get upset because the Niners didn't use a seventh round pick on a tackle. Like, at that point, you're just throwing darts, and anybody you get in the seventh round, you could probably get something similar in UDFA. But I would have liked to have seen them be more aggressive in UDFA and go get some guys that might have fallen out of the draft for whatever reason. I know the Kansas tackle, for example, was a guy that had slipped out of there, and you would think they'd have had some insight into him from Dominic Cooney. But the fifth round, they had multiple picks in the fifth. Again, I mentioned Colton McKivitz earlier. I mentioned, you talk about Jalen Moore. Like, those were not high draft picks. And that's, I think, generally when you're taking tackles, that's where you need to draft them earlier, you know, the first couple of days. But you can find guys who are at least serviceable. And Jalen Moore turned into a $15 million a year player. I think a lot of people, including people at 49ers HQ, were surprised by that. But also it speaks to the fact that you can find at least solid middle of the road players in some of those later rounds, even at premium positions like offensive tackle.
Yeah, exactly. Jalen Moore's contract and McGlinchey was pointing out to me, like, okay, they used a 9 pick on a tackle, wasn't a perfect tackle. They did it because they needed a tackle. They wanted to replace Brown, right, year. And but look, he wasn't a very good player, so why did they invest that? But my point turnaround is, and they thought Jalen Moore was overpaid, look at how much these guys are valued. You don't have to pay them that if you draft them, right? I mean, you could say, look, these guys are way overpaid. We had them for a rookie contract or fifth round contract in the Jalen Moore thing. Why not just keep taking them because that's when they're valuable? That's my point. I don't think the McGlinchey thing was a bad thing. I think they had a starting right tackle. Wasn't as good as they hoped he was going to be. Colton Miller was probably is a better player, just has been a better player. But you don't know that. You took the shot at it. And that doesn't mean never take a tackle in the top 15 again, at least in my opinion. I thought McGlinchey took a lot of criticism. I think he was fine. Clearly was worth a lot of money to the Denver Broncos. Maybe not really worth that, but that almost makes me think the other way. Go get them. Go get these guys so then they become valuable for someone else, and then you go draft another guy.
Yeah, and McGlinchey, you know, for whatever warts he had, and he did have some, he was a dominant run blocker. I mean, he was as good a run blocking tackle as there was in league. And then last year, played really well for the Broncos when he kind of got back to fully healthy again. So I did think that part of the reason tackle was in the conversation was going to be, and this year, I mean, that's for the same reason that they took McGlinchey, because it was, well, we haven't really been high enough in the draft to get one of those guys that we view as a top three or four tackle in the draft. And then the way the board fell, the top three guys all went in the first nine picks. But to your point, still, I think it was a decent offensive tackle class, but you had to overlook some of the things that they just simply are not willing to overlook, and especially when it comes to arm length, because even the top guys, as we know, Will Campbell, yep, looking at you, that was such a point of discussion leading up to the draft, is his arm length. And 49ers, they will budge on it when you get later into the draft, but they will not budge on it when you get that high.
Yeah, that is something for all of us to remember. There's just certain things that they don't do. They don't take defensive backs in the first round. They don't take short arm tackles, short arm linemen, like both sides, right? Michael Williams, really long arms. Those help. Like this is not some stupid analytical, oh, it's just a number. Like, this is things that I think are pretty well proven in the NFL, that if you have your choice between a long arm guy or a short arm guy, you take the long arm guy. It just makes sense.
And John Lynch mentioned that the other day, that especially when he was talking about some of the defensive linemen they drafted, that it wasn't just size, it was length. Yeah. And if you go and you watch Alfred Collins tape, I think he had 6 deflections or something, mm-hmm. and 2 of them resulted in interceptions last year, including one return for a touchdown against Florida, I believe. So, yeah, it's something they covet. And again, I think a lot of it plays into just kind of the modern NFL, where if teams are trying to get the ball out on time and quickly, and you don't have time to get the rush home, it's certainly helpful to have guys who can get those big paws up there and get their hands on the ball.
All right. We've talked plenty of stuff, but this is the question I definitely want to ask Nick Wagner. I've asked you a version of this, I think, in the past. Oh, yeah. Asked all my guests this question, the one everyone waits for. Nick Wagner.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
What's your favorite movie right now?
I just saw it. I've been meaning to see it for a little while since it came out, but I saw Sinners, the Ryan Coogler movie. I am not by any means a big horror movie fan. I am not into vampires and things like that, but this is not your traditional horror movie. It is not just a vampire movie by any means. It's really not any of that. It's the thematic elements are very prevalent and appropriate for society in 2025. But Ryan Coogler is a genius. The movie is beautiful. It is incredibly well acted, and the cast is just off the charts. Obviously, Michael B. Jordan, who pretty much always is always really good in anything he's in. But Delroy Lindo, I think, steals a lot of the scenes that he's in. So, I recommend it very highly. I think a lot of Ryan Coogler's movies are really, really well done, and this would certainly rank at the top. I wouldn't be at all surprised if this is – I don't know this for a fact, Tim, but you can fact check me. I don't know that many vampire movies have ever been nominated for an Oscar, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is the first, if that hasn't happened before.
Excellent point. Wow. I had not thought of that. I've heard it's like a musical, right? It's like a history of music in some way too, or mood music.
It's about blues music, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of kind of thematic elements about, culture and kind of people who, adopt other cultures and the way that that's enforced upon other people, and just really, really well done and really well shot, and a lot of incredible visuals. But like I said, the acting for me is kind of what steals it, because there is a lot of characters in that movie who are, anytime they're on the screen, you can't look away.
All right, Nick, once this Warriors playoff run is over, I'm definitely meaning to get
there. You go.
But great recommendation. Great conversation, Nick, as always. We shall continue our conversation in the media room and on the practice field and every other time that you and I are chatting about.
On the golf course, most important.
Golf course. We're just focused on the golf course. Golf course is just fine focus. Hit the ball around. Let's see what happens. See if Jerry Rice can find our balls when we hit them a far afield, both of you and I. All right, Nick, thank you so much. We'll get on the golf course soon. And thank you so much for the conversation.
Talk you got soon. It as always.
I'm going to show for today.